This is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a hop off the path.
You got to be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You got to hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that.
I would like to welcome from the U.S. Open site at Shinnecock Hills, the Vice President of Tour Operations for Cleveland Srixon Golf, Rodney McDonald. Rodney, thanks for taking the time today to be on the podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
First off, what are you hearing from the players on the course? Do they think it's playing fair? Is it going to be a great test of golf? Sort of what feedback are you getting from being on the grounds this week?
Kind of all of the above of what you just said. Definitely going to be a great test of golf. Going to be even better test of golf as it firms up. We've got a little rain coming here this morning, but then after that, I think they've got four straight days of perfect weather and probably 20-mile-an-hour winds, so it'll dry out and get firmer and faster as the week goes. I think they also think it's very fair. I was here in 04, and the fairways are definitely wider than I remember in 04, and the rough is more penal. So it's set up a little bit different. There's some really, really hard holes out there, and there's some, I don't know if there's any easy holes, but it's going to be interesting.
When you go into a week like this at a U.S. Open, are the players that you're working with, are they changing equipment at all? And then if they are changing equipment, is it normally wedges based on the turf conditions and what they want to do sort of with their wedges, or do they just stay with what they got because they're not trying to experiment or change anything around going into a major? What sort of work are you doing equipment-wise with the guys?
Oh, there's a little bit of both, actually. You know, with this event, we have players that get into this field that don't see our tour trailer really ever. So those players are in, making sure that they've got all their stuff dialed in, making sure they've had their loft and lies checked and maybe new grips. You know, the players that are here week in and week out, they're pretty much showing up to play with what they brought. They've done their preparations. And now when they get on site and play a first practice round or two, they may come in and say, you know what, I need a 2-iron. I'm not going to hit my 3-wood at all. Or I need new wedges with fresh grooves. That's pretty typical of a major championship. This week in particular, it seems like I think we built every 2-iron we have in the trailer. It seems like the general consensus, at least on our staff, is that 3-wood's somewhat almost useless on this golf course, and they're going to need a 2 or a 3-iron driving iron type iron to play out there. So that's kind of what we've been doing, a little bit of everything, but mainly just long irons and wedges.
Are they going with the long irons in the sense of, or the utility irons, based on the distance they wanted to go from the tee, or do they just get more control than a 3-wood and that still goes plenty far for what they're trying to accomplish?
I think it's both, actually. I think they feel like they can control the flight better with the 2-iron. It seems like there's going to be a lot of crosswinds out here. And then they just don't think that the course fits a lot of them from a distance standpoint for the need for a 3-wood. And they feel like they would just hit the 2 or the 3-iron utility iron a lot more.
When you're around the players during the, say, a regular tour event versus a major, can you even get a sense even from their sort of focus or determination or the seriousness of it? Is there a different vibe to a major than there is a regular tour event?
No question about it. Yeah, no question about it. The four majors and even the Players' Championships sneaking into where that vibe is different too. It's a lot less chit-chat on the range, a lot more office-type, business-type atmosphere out there. And then it's also a lot of not as many ball beating and working on something on the range. I mean, they're on the range here a lot less because they're out on the golf course a lot more trying to figure it out at major championships.
Do you get the same sense from the caddies of they're really taking this week serious and it's a different vibe even with those guys as well? I mean, I know those people don't probably realize how hard a tour caddy really works for doing preparation for their player, but is this week it's maximum 100% focus effort, even what the caddies are putting forward?
Without a doubt, they're walking the course before and after their players. I was out late yesterday, just walking a few holes. I hadn't seen 10 through 14 yet. So I was out walking yesterday, and I don't think I saw – I didn't see a single player until I got to the 14th tee, but I probably saw 30 caddies that were just walking the fairways and making notes. So, yeah, they kick it up a notch this week too. But those guys work hard every week.
Sort of with your job as a vice president of tour operations, and then kind of from 10,000 feet, how do you view your role, and what do you normally do week in, week out with the players, and sort of if you could explain to the listeners what your job essentially is, which I'm sure there's 15 million things going on in your job, but what's sort of the, from 10,000 feet, how do you view your job of what you're doing?
Yeah, probably the simplest way or the simplest analogy is on a much, much smaller scale. I'm kind of the general manager of this team as far as like negotiating contracts and getting the right players on staff. I have a wonderful group of guys that helps with scouting or even does a lot of the scouting on the web.com tour and in the Canadian tour and Latino America tour and college golf that kind of all feeds to this tour. And then I oversee the on-site operation, which is basically the analogy that I would use there is we're basically the pit crew for the golfers on site. We set up on Sunday in a big 18 wheeler that pops out with its full workshop and showroom type of thing. We set up on Sunday evening and we were here until mid to late afternoon on Wednesday, just taking care of any needs the player has, whether he needs a full set of clubs built or if he just needs grip changed or if he just wants to come in and hang out and have a Diet Coke and hang out with us.
What was your background to sort of get to the position you have in golf, and kind of what was your pathway to get to where you're at this point for your career?
Years and years ago, I worked for a sporting goods chain in the Midwest in Kansas City, and they went out of business. And I answered an ad in the paper to be a sales rep for a small putter company called Ray Cook. We sold those putters in my store, so I knew I was familiar with the line. I got the job, so I was the sales rep in Kansas, Missouri, Iowa, and Nebraska. About a year into that, they asked for a volunteer to start a tour department, and I volunteered to do that and went out on the road. And a year later, Cleveland Golf hired me, and I've just kind of been climbing the corporate ladder since. But I've been on tour since 95 was my first partial year. 96 was my first full year out here, so I'm on 22 or 23 years out here, and I've kind of seen it all. I was standing there when Tiger said hello world, and a lot of stuff's gone on since.
With you being out there that long, is there say two or three golfers over the years that were some of your favorites that you got to work with and that you really admired about them as people and as golfers, and who would those guys be, and what was the best part about working with them?
Well, over the years, it's been many. I mean, when I first started with Cleveland, we were literally, all we really did was wedges. You know, I had two wedge bags that I traveled with every week. And, you know, back then I had the pleasure of working with, you know, guys like Greg Norman and Ernie Els and Lee Trevino and Fred Couples and Tiger when he first came out. So that's, you know, that's always high in my memory bank. And for the most part, everybody that I've worked with has been great. We had BJ Singh on our staff when he was number one in the world. So it's always a treat to have the number one player in the world on your staff. You know, and then we've just had some unbelievable gentlemen on our staff, and like Ben Crenshaw and Larry Mize and Joe Durant. So it's been fantastic.
Over the years, has there been a player or two that their feel for the equipment, if it's slightly one way or the other, is so good it was staggering of how precise they needed it built and how accurate they actually were in giving you feedback of, hey, this club is X, Y, or Z? Was there any guys who just literally could tell the most slightest nuances on a golf club and their feel was that good?
BJ was probably the one that comes to mind real quick there. You know, as far as somebody that was on our staff, Trevino was that way with wedges way back in the day when we used to make wedges for him. Those two are come to mind real quick.
On the opposite end, was there ever a guy like, no matter what, he's so good, no matter what you made him, he's like, yeah, it's fine, and they could just play with anything, and we're on the opposite end of that, but we're still obviously great players?
Oh, there's a lot of those. There's a lot of guys that just, you know, we have to kind of beg them to come into the trailer to just get their grips changed. And it's not really that they don't have the knowledge of their clubs. They just, you know, they're just what we would call super low maintenance. Joe Durant comes to mind, who, would, you know, in my opinion, and most people's opinion, is probably one of the best ball strikers to ever play the tour. Very rarely steps in a trailer. And we literally have to grab his clubs from him just to put new grips on him sometimes.
If you were going to go out to a PGA Tour event and say a couple of the Srixon Cleveland guys to follow, which couple players, if you were a fan, would you follow, and why do you think they would be fun for the fans to kind of take in what they do for 18 holes and kind of watching them?
You know, I always like following guys that kind of play the game the way I, you know, not necessarily the way I do, but the way I wish they did. So it's neat for me to watch guys like Russell Knox, for example, the way he kind of dissects a golf course, because he's long enough, but he's not a bomber like all the rest of them. But, you know, he makes his living by hitting fairways and putting it in certain places on the greens and getting up and down when he needs to. He and Graham McDowell are that way. You know, and then if you want to watch somebody on our staff that bombs it, you know, you can go out and watch J.B. Holmes or Keegan Bradley. It just kind of depends on what you want to see that day.
Advice for fans going to, like, or if you see someone going out to a PGA Tour event, since you've been out there for so many years, what do you think the fans should do more often that they don't do? So if you were making a recommendation, like, you're going to go to a tour event, you're probably not going to think about doing X, but if you love golf, think about watching the event or doing this. Is there any advice you'd give to people who go to watch an event of something they might not normally think of doing that, from a fan's perspective, would be great or really interesting to watch?
I would say go watch them warm up on the driving range, or go watch them practice after they've finished their round. And, you know, just pay attention to what they're doing and how they practice. Because so many of us amateurs, we just go to the range either to just warm up or just to beat balls, you know. For years, I used to try to, before I left the tour event on Wednesday, you know, watch Ernie Els or watch David Toms for 10 minutes just so I could hopefully go home and have some semblance of that tempo. I mean, it's amazing to watch them. And then, you know, it's at major championships, sometimes it's difficult to follow players, especially if they're in a big grouping. If they happen to be paired with Tiger, then it's almost impossible to get close to watch. So you might want to, you know, pull back a group or two and find somebody else to follow so you can actually see them hit actual shots. You know, or if you're a person that just likes to sit on a par three and watch them all come in, that's kind of a personal preference.
Yeah, it's always interesting to watch. I always get out of watching them practice, like even post-round, of there's no wasted time, and the focus that they practice with is I think people I gain from watching it, of just the work that they're putting in and how they do it and how they go about it. There, that is practice with a purpose when you watch a PGA Tour guy kind of work on his game. I think it's fantastic to watch as well.
I agree.
Is there a favorite event you like to go to on the PGA Tour outside of a major that the event is just great to watch, or great for you to attend, great for the fans to watch, and just a wonderful town to have the event in? Is there one or two events on the tour that you get to see every year that you just absolutely love making that stop?
Well, I mean, there's two or three, and for unique reasons. I mean, obviously the majors are the best, and Augusta is the best trip of the year, but the Phoenix Open is a spectacle. I don't know if it's bucket list stuff for a golf fan, but it's probably pretty close to just see it one time. It's kind of like nothing else you're going to ever see, especially if you have the gumption to go on Saturday with 205,000 of your friends. I've always enjoyed going to the Byron Nelson. We were lucky enough to have Byron on our staff when he's live, and I've maintained a relationship with Peggy, so that's always been kind of one of my favorite tournaments. It's always been, you know, very well followed. The fans are great there as well. I think you can probably have fun at just about any PGA Tour event. They do a great job with making it fan accessible.
I'm assuming you're out on the road this year and saw Trinity Forest. And if you were, would you sort of think of that as a PGA Tour golf course, you know, compared to kind of the traditional Parkland style? Did the players like the change? Did you like it? What was sort of your thoughts on that?
I did, actually. I mean, it was quite a piece of property and kind of out in the middle of nowhere. So it was a big difference from us that being there at the, you know, the Four Seasons Resort in Las Colinas for all those years. So it was a 180 degree change. But I think the players did like it. I mean, I think they liked the fact that it was different and liked the fact that they had to play the course in a different way. So, I mean, great practice facility. You know, it's the home of, I think one of the college teams plays there, SMU, I believe. They had a great practice facility as well. But no, I think it was a neat place, very neat place.
From watching on TV, I thought the course looked great, you know, browned out a little bit, guys having hit different golf shots. I thought it was fantastic from a fan standpoint of just seeing a little bit different golf than what you traditionally see. I thought it presented wonderful on television. So I hope they keep using that stop. And I think it's just cool because it's different, right? It's sort of American Links.
I agree. Yep, I agree.
Questions on one of your staff members and on Smiley Kaufman. How's his game coming along? And I totally respect this guy for how hard he's grinding. And I saw a couple good rounds coming through. So I have nothing but respect for him. We've all struggled with our games. We played golf long enough. It can be easy, and it can also be really hard. So how is he coming? Are you seeing some positive signs on him and out of his play? And, you know, is he starting to sort of come out of this? And because he's got the talent, you know, he won early, he's got the pedigree. How's that process coming along for him?
I think it's coming along fine. It's obviously is a process, and he's working hard. He's had a lot going on in his life. He just got married, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. He's had a change in coach, swing coach. He's had a change in management. So he's had a lot going on, but he is extremely talented. As you said, he's a great kid. He's an extremely hard worker. He'll hard work his way through it, which he's already started to do. And it's tough, you know. And there's been guys publicly and privately tell him, you know, hey, I missed 8 cuts in a row before I won a tournament. And then I won in the 9th week. So it's just a matter of keeping on grinding, which he's doing every week. So I have all the faith in the world that he'll be out of it soon.
Yeah, it's going to be a great story when he does, because that's some perseverance there. But like you said, the talent, I always say, talent doesn't go away, right? And he's got talent. So I can't wait to see him sort of come across the other side of it. And then it's just going to be a great story. I've heard nothing but nice things about him as a person, and he's a pro, you know, a true pro. It's going to be interesting to see it. But it looks like I saw a couple of rounds too that's starting to look pretty tidy. It's getting there a little bit, you know, some good rounds thrown in with it. So it'll be fun to hopefully see him turn that corner and sort of get back to where he should be with the talent level he has. So there's a lot of people out there rooting for him. He's kind of handling this in the right way.
Oh, I agree. He does, and you're right. He does. He has a extremely strong fan base.
Yeah, no, like people are like on his side. Like I'm rooting like hell for him. I mean, I liked him when he first came out on tour with the pedigree he had, but like to see him handle, you know. And there's been guys who've gone through this, right? I mean, I think of Henrik Stenson, Stricker, and if I probably wrote down, I mean, and they come out the other side better. I mean, Stricker is amazing from going through what he did, and he will, because the talent is there, right? He's not some guy who just sort of hacked it on tour and sort of pseudo got out of there with 3 hot putter weeks. Like he can play, really play.
So, I mean, he didn't, you know, you don't shoot 61 in the final round of a PGA Tour event to win without talent.
Exactly. And the pedigree is there. So it's going to be I think it's a good golf story when he comes out on the other end of this and you know, to see that other side. He could take off to another level once he kind of, man, you work through this and get past it. The confidence you'll have probably coming out of that, and he's still plenty young. Like, I don't know. I think the upside's still really there for him, and I'm rooting for him. I think a lot of people are, I guess is what I'm saying. So
I agree.
It's good to see hopefully see him playing well again. Last question I have for you. Predictions for the week. You're kind of out there. You're getting the vibe. What kind of player do you think this golf course and championship best suits? And is there any certain players, you know, 2 or 3 names that you're thinking really have a strong chance this week?
Oh boy. It's, you know, I've heard, you know, all the players that I've talked to have said that anybody can win here. You know, it doesn't really favor a bomber. Doesn't really penalize a shorter hitter as much. I think it's just going to be, you know, the guy that hits the most greens and puts the ball in the right spot in the greens is going to be the guy that's there. I mean, there's spots out there. Well, the first cut of rough is penal. The second cut is, I don't even know how to describe it. Might be unplayable at times. You might have to take an unplayable out of some of the spots. And that's not an exaggeration, but the greens, you know, you just, if you short side yourself or put yourself on the wrong side of these greens, you probably just might as well go ahead and write down bogey. I think if you can just eliminate the double bogeys and pick the guy that his iron game is on, I think he'll be right there. You know, obviously the shorter iron that you can hit into the green, the better, but there's a lot of holes where there's just enough of a dog leg that you've got to, you know, like the first hole is probably, might be the easiest hole on the course, is 399 yard par four that everybody that I hear just going to hit four and five iron off the tee. So, you know, does it really favor anybody? I mean, we have a kid on our staff that we just signed, Cole Miller, that drove it to 30 feet on Monday or Tuesday with driver, but he's like, yeah, but I'm hitting four iron every day in the tournament. Just had to try it. So, you know, our highest, as far as our staff, you know, Hideki's our highest ranked player in the world. I think when I looked at the odds the other day, he and Keegan were at the top of the guys for our odds, because, you know, Keegan's, you know, top 10 every year in total driving. So he's an extremely accurate driver of the golf ball, and he's also long. You know, but then you get somebody like Graham McDowell that's a specialist in playing courses like this, especially if it gets windy, has a great iron game, same as Russell Knox. Those top 10 players in the world are always going to be at the top of everybody's favorite list. You know, if Jordan Spieth's putter happens to get hot again, look out for him. You know, and then Justin and Dustin are battling for number one again.
Yeah, but you literally could have a J.B. Holmes and a Graham McDowell at the top of the leaderboard with two different styles of games, but both can play on that golf course. So it truly is, sounds like it's a real open, meaning there's not one type of player that's going to have a huge advantage one way or the other. I think it's going to be pretty darn interesting to watch this week.
It will be. It's going to be great.
Well, thank you for your time. I greatly appreciate it. Thanks for giving us kind of a field report for what you're seeing, and hope the guys on your staff play well this week. And like I said, thanks for coming on the podcast, Rodney. I greatly appreciate it.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.